Yes, they took in a member from the Stock Exchange who had been a jobber and a broker, I believe. And he has always been interested in the bonds, privately. And they started doing a lot of trade. He was trading direct with the public from Stanley Gibbons. And they would buy blocks of stuff from ourselves, through a broker, obviously. And the prices just took off, and then they eased a bit, and then they just rocketed. And I mean, I can remember selling one Chinese bond that had been around about 20%. They'd gone up 30, 40, 50, 60. And I said, well, they're never going to settle at that rate. They never pay more than 50 or 60. The debt was about 60 million in total, par. And I actually sold a lot of stock to loads of people, but one particular broker I have in mind, I sold him stock for about four different clients, a lot of stock. And he discovered when it had this huge rise, he'd sold some of it to take big profits. And he discovered that he sold one stock twice. In other words, he was short, which he couldn't be. He had to buy the stock back to cover his position. And he came to me, it was Canton Kowloon Railway. He came to me and I said, I haven't got any stock at all. So he went to my opposition to try and buy it. They didn't have any stock at all. So he said, well, I've got to buy it. I said, well, hopefully in the next few weeks I'll come across some. I didn't. And in the end, I had to send him stock at 110%, which I didn't have, and I didn't want to do it. And I said, they'll never be worth this price. But I, you know, I can't sell you stock I haven't got unless I give myself a margin. And he actually paid 110, and then they went back to 20%.
Where did you get the stock from?
I didn't. I was still short. That's why I charged him that price. I couldn't afford to sell it at, I think they were 100 at the time. I said, I just don't want to sell them. He said, well, I've got to close the position. So I said, well, you know, obviously I don't suit you. Go and try the other bloke. He couldn't buy them from him either. And I sold him stock at 110, which I think he bought for his client about 30 and 40 and sold at about 80. So they made a damn good profit on that. But it was just a case of I didn't want to sell them. He didn't have any stock on the book. Everything was going. We had stocks like that still haven't been settled, which will be the only two German stocks unsettled, are the East German stocks, Dresden and Saxony. They've been up to 120%. When I left the company, I was a bull at 10%, which I'd written down from about 80 over the years. So I left them with a good position because I think they'll make money on that one, on those two. Four stocks, actually. There's two types of Dresden and two of Saxony. But they were over 120%, and there was no stock about. So now I think with reunification, that they will settle those. At what rate, I don't know. If it's as good as the West German government did, there'd be an awful lot of money to be made. But I won't participate anymore.
What kind of capital do you need to run your books? You say that there wasn't a lot of capital about.
Well, it depends what time you mention. I mean, when we started off, when the White and Cheeseman people went out, we retained ourselves as White and Cheeseman. We probably had a capital of, this is what, 68, something like that. We probably had a capital of about 120,000. But of course, all the stocks then were much lower price. Even the Australians were miles lower price then, you know. But the foreign bonds were mostly much lower. And they gradually went up over the years, and of course the capital increased, thank heavens. But it was quite small when we started off. It was a bit of a shoestring job, but it worked out.
And so how much would you have to use to run the book, say, getting on during the 1970s?
Half a million. About half a million.
Did you find you had to rely on the banks terribly much?
Not a lot. It would happen at times. We had the facilities there. But no, not a lot. In fact, at certain times when peers were quiet, we, in point of fact, were lending money, which helped. But the reason is, really, we got in a mess more over the Australian stocks, because if you trade in 10,000 shares and make threepence a share, you know your profit. But it isn't a profit, because the time that stock's delivered and you get your money, it could be 6 months. So Australians are extremely bad for that sort of thing. Where industrials are the same, whereas with a foreign bond, there's a fortnightly account. And you settle then, and the bonds are physically delivered. And if they're not, after a couple of weeks, one presses and says, well, where are they? Or why haven't you delivered them? Or why haven't you paid us? So you've got quicker settlement. Also, quite a bit of our business from the 60s to well into the 80s, 65 to 85, was we dealt in the Irish gilt edge market era. So when one dealt there, it's cash the next day. So your money wasn't tied up. All the tied up money was in Australia, on the water, as we used to say. But the foreign bonds, basically, no, they were settled. Every account, fortnight or 3 week, whatever, basically fortnightly. Irish gilt edge was settled within 1 or 2 days. So you received your profit and had it there in the bank. It was the Australians that let us down.
Did you ever have any direct contact with the governments in whose bonds you were dealing?
No, never.
What about their brokers?
The brokers dealt with us. The government didn't deal with the brokers. The government dealt with Merchant Bank normally. They deal with Barings, Rothschilds, people like that, Hambros, Schroeder. And they would in turn not deal with us direct. They would deal through the brokers that they selected. As I said to you earlier, in the case of the Chilean stocks, they used 3 different brokers.
Do you ever have any contacts with these brokers outside of the house? Did you ever have any, ever do any business outside of the house?
No, not outside, because you wouldn't remember all your positions. I mean, you'd speak outside. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, you'd have lunch occasionally and speak with them, certainly.
And what would be the kinds of things that you'd talk about? Would they want to get in touch with you about particular issues or particular questions?
No, because basically they've been doing it for a while. It might happen if a chap left a broking firm and they put someone in charge of it again who didn't know the market. Then he would come to you. It happened in a case in mind where the chap that used to do all the foreign business for a big broking firm was away. His number two was ill, and they sent in a chap who was a very efficient dealer, but he didn't know our market at all. And he just said, I'm in your hands, what the hell do I do? Because it was tricky. I mean, certain Greek stocks, certain Romanian stocks were not around amount in pounds. I mean, if you dealt in Spanish fours, you couldn't have a £100 stock. It was 99.68 because of the currency which had changed, you see. And 79.72 was an amount. And you could deal in an amount and the chap would say, I want to sell 10,000. I said, there isn't 10,000. Well, there must be. I said, no, there isn't 10,000. It's 998. And they had to have that right to pay their client out for when he sold the stock. So you had to know these things. I mean, there's different denominations. It was not around £20. It was nine. In the Russians, again, a lot of the stocks were 100-pounders and 20-pounders, but you couldn't have 100 in others. It was 99.25 or £99.50. All sorts of complications that you could only know on the foreign book. I mean, I could get a lunch and come back and the chap would say, one of my dealers, I bought so-and-so. I say, you can't have that. Yes, you can. I said, no, you can't have it. There's no £50 bonds. He bought 750. I said, there's no 750. They're hundreds, twenties and £20 bonds. So it's 740 or 760. Now, if you don't know that and you let that build up, you can be in a hell of a mess. And the broker is and the client is. So really, it was a lot to do with training, which I had very, very good training and experience.
Did you feel all along that you were dealing in a highly specialised market?
Yes.
That was in many respects quite different from
the
main equity and main gilts.
Yeah, because we did a few equities, very few, and it was different. There were different people dealing in who you didn't know, the other market makers. But with the foreign bonds, I always felt at home having done it for so long. I mean, when the German settlement came out, which was highly complicated, and I'm not brilliant at anything like that, I was just given this pamphlet and said, well, go home, study it, and tell me what it means, you know.
What did you feel the rest of the market's attitude was to you as a as a jobber in the foreign bond market?
Experts. Experts, I would say.
Did you know the other jobbers in other markets socially or even professionally?
Later, but in the early years, no, you never went near them. You didn't know who they were, what they traded in, you knew the names. But I say, I think it probably came in, what do you think, about 1955, 54, 5 I was dealing. The first cocktail party I ever got invited to was Firm of Messel, which no longer exists, it's Shearson Lehman, forget Messel, I think. And they always used to have a cocktail party in their office at 31 Throgmorton Street, which was a cold buffet, which was beautiful. And everyone went, it was packing, but it was an invitation. Then Tony and I got an invite to Rogers and Milbourne, a small broker, and they had a small box up there where they'd have a crate of champagne and ask about 10 people up. And that was the first cocktail party we ever went to. I mean, starting 15, 20 years ago, you went to dozens. You couldn't go to them, there's so many. But it seemed to be the in thing. Of course, if you're queuing up at Lang and Cruikshanks or whatever, helping yourself some food, and you happen to be standing next to a chap you don't know, you've got talking, or you knew it by sight. And that's how the other jobbers, you got to know each other.
Yes. Did you feel that jobbers were a different type of person to the brokers?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
In what ways?
Different animal entirely. Mm. Well, you got some brokers who would go jobbing and would be quite good at it. But I always reckon it was best to be brought up from the very beginning as a jobber.
What were the qualities that you needed to be a good jobber?
Well, I suppose you've got to have a few brains. You've got to have a bit of nerve. You've got to have a little bit of nerve there.
Can you think of any occasions when you needed nerve as a jobber?
Yes, yes. I can think of occasions when I've taken on positions that in the early, well, especially in the early days, when it was bad enough when I was director myself, but when I wasn't, I've taken positions where I've been terrified to tell the governor when he came back in case he said it was wrong.
Can you think of any particular example?
I can think of one occasion which I planned where a small jobbing firm, very small jobbing firm, Aubrey Sperling, no, Black and Boyd, I beg your pardon, this old man, he was on his own, I think, had one blue button, came over to me one day and he said, "What a German young," which German 5.5 government loan. They were quite a high price in the 90s. And I made him a price. He said, "I've got a big one here." And he was shaking like a leaf because he only dealt very small. He was an old man, nice old man. Nixon, his name was. And he said, "Well, I want to sell 45,000, whatever. Can you take them?" So I said, "Yeah, I'll take them." And I took them. The two partners were out having a drink. And I said to my chum, "Doug, hold on, don't deal for a minute." I dashed out to someone's box to offer the stock. And I had to offer it at a higher level than they were bidding before. But I knew they were keen buyers, and he took it. So I got rid of them. And as I came back on, two partners arrived, and one of them said to me, "Where have you been?" So I said, "Well, I've just been out. Have you done anything?" And before I could say, "What have you done?" So I said, "I bought this for..." "You've done what?" He said, "You've been in here 2 years, you know nothing. You think you can deal with a man that's been in here 40 odd years?" I said, "Well, he's not a big, it doesn't matter, he's got the experience you haven't. What do you think we can do with those?" Because all he saw was the purchase. I just arrived back. I said, "Well, I've already just sold them." Oh, because nothing more was said. But I was very nervous when I went out there to try and sell them. Yes.
What other qualities, apart from nerve and brains?
I think they always used to say to me when I first went in, "It's not what you know, it's who you know." That is not true. In a specialist market, if you don't know what you're dealing in, you can easily come unstuck. If you buy, as I said, the wrong amount of stock, if you miss a sinking fund, if you buy stock after sinking fund's been completed and you've got to hold it for 6 months and finance it. The foreign bond market was different. But even so, who you know was very important. And I can remember an occasion, I had a lot of friends, and it was helped because I'd done checking for 18 months. Mm. And a lot of those guys, I think 40% have made it to the market, 30%. Mm. So they always came to people they knew. Did a lot of people favours, which didn't hurt, because it always paid back. Generally getting on with people, I suppose, really. Mm. Was getting on with people.
Mm. While we're on the subject of people, are there any individuals or personalities that linger in the memory?
Oh, God, loads of them. So many. In more recent years, I suppose he left about 10 years ago, there was a character named Bonnie who used to do all the card tricks, who everyone knew. I never knew his name. Mm. Never knew his name, but everyone knew him as Bonnie.
Anyone knew he was a member?
Yes, he was a member.
When did he do his card tricks?
On the floor, when it was quiet, he'd come around and say, anyone want to pick a card, and he'd get on with it. He was very, very good at it. Mm. There were all sorts of characters in there. Mm. Almost too numerous. I mean, going way back, 1948, something like that, there was the Stock Exchange had a cadet force, its own cadet force, Army Cadet Force. There was an old guy called Major Caro, who had been in the First World War, and he was a major of the cadet force, and had been for some years. And several of us joined that, and we had a great deal of fun. Again, we met a lot of friends. We used to go away for weekend camps. We had guards training. It would be had been the Coldstream, then it was the Welsh Guards, so we'd go to Wellington Barracks, and Austerley and Purbright. And he was a real character. The first day of summer, he would come in with a straw boater on. And he did it specifically every time, you know. Mm. More recent years, there's a chap called Ginger Baker, generally known as Nutty Ginger, who's only about 60, I should think. And he used to dress up quite regularly and come in and do the cowboy act. One of my partners gave him a pair of Gurkha shorts, which came down, you know, and he'd dress up in that. Mm. And, oh, yeah, many, many, many characters. Mm.
Many. Thinking of the Stock Exchange in the early 70s and comparing it with the Stock Exchange when you joined, was it different? Or was it still, in what ways was it different?
In the early 70s, you were still on the old floor, you still had that part, but the atmosphere changed a lot. I see in the early times when I joined, I mean, you wouldn't wear a blue shirt. I mean, it would be forbidden. It's got to be a white shirt and a stiff collar. Mm-hmm. So dress changed an awful lot. And I think relaxation, it was very much a part in the 60s. Although you had friends, of course you did, and you went to lunch together and that. A member was a member. He was definitely different to an authorised clerk, and a partner or director, whether you were a company or a firm, was different to a member. That dropped out. I mean, you know, in the last 10 years, I mean, people would call you by your Christian name if they didn't even know you hardly, and shorten it as well. I mean, you know, it was the whole, the discipline had relaxed enormously, enormously.
And what about jobbing itself, the actual technique of doing it on the floor of the house? Had that changed in any way?
No. No, not to us. Except that I say that you did know, and it didn't wasn't applicable to us because maybe we went out, we'd ceased to trade in those stocks. Yes, jobbers spoke much more to each other. Mm. Yes, they would. A jobber would speak much more to each other than they'd done before. Mm. Other than that, I don't think it changed a lot.
Mm. How did you keep yourself competitive when you were the only firm dealing in foreign stocks or foreign bonds?
Well, we didn't have any competition.
Mm. So did you feel you had to be competitive?
We made roughly the same price as we made before, the same width prices, unless things got very difficult. Mm. But it was easy. I mean, where you had a lot of, suppose you had a lot of market makers in ICI, and there's a threepenny difference in the price between one to other. You could deal like that probably, but they'd say it was a bit odd because it's almost choice price. You did a choice. Mm. But with a foreign market, it's totally different. I mean, one could say, I could have a position where I'm doing nothing, very quiet, doing a little bit of business, and someone comes up and says to me, what are China 98 English? And I'll say they're 22.3. Mm. Oh, that's no good. Can I help you? No, it's no good. Now, if he was a friend, he'd immediately say what he wanted to do. But if he's a bit of a stranger, or he doesn't know you, or he's not used to the market, I say, well, I made you 22.3, any help? No, it's no good at all. Well, why? And he didn't want to open. Mm. Now, if they don't open, they're never going to get anywhere, because as he's already said he can't trade, he might say, no, I can't give 23, I'm a buyer, I can only give 21. How many? 10, sell you 10. And they can't believe it. But I've got them on the book, and I've got a nice profit on it. Mm. I might have bought 100,000 at 16 3 months ago. Mm. I'm quite happy. They've gone up, although they've gone up, I'm quite happy. I want 23 and I'm willing to give 22. Mm. But I might be quite suited to sell them at 21 because I need a profit and I'm doing nothing. And certain people would never do business because they'd never open their mouths. You know, they're just nervous or coy or I don't know what, but they never didn't do their business. And that could happen in that market where it would be far rarer to happen in the industrial market.
If you had the choice of starting your career in the stock exchange again, would you have done it any differently? Would you have gone into a different market?
No. No, I'm very happy with what I did. As I say, because it was a specialist market and I enjoyed it. There were so many characters and different people in there that were, most of them great fun to deal with, some of them very difficult to deal with, and some very frightening, and some frightened of you, so you helped them out, or you know. It was a grand life.
I think we can finish there.
Good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.